Hi everyone, this is Stacy Bressler from Archer Energy Solutions, and this is a Direct Connect where we talk about things about 10-15 minutes about something that's really important happening on in the industry. And today we're going to tackle the ever-present right now topic of why are IBRs or inverter-based resources on the radar. And I want to set the scene a little bit. So we're seeing a significant shift in the grid with a rapid influx of renewable energy. We got solar, wind, battery systems, and they all rely on IBRs, or what we call inverter-based resources. And I'm just going to use IBRs from now. I'm not going to say inverter-based resources every time. Historically, the grid was dominated by these large synchronous generators, the big, predictable, and easy to regulate. But IBRs are changing that dynamic right now. And NERC and FERC, they're paying some close attention because these resources are now becoming essential. But they introduced some uniquely special type of reliability and cybersecurity challenges that we hadn't really thought about. So today we're going to kind of explore why this shift is happening, what those risks are, and how the regulatory landscape is adapting. So I got my guest here, another managing partner at Archer, Steve Parker. Wave, Steve.
Hello. And I'm not accustomed to being described as a guest, but we'll go with that. Thank you for pulling me into this and giving me the opportunity to chat about this topic a little bit.
You bet.
You know, I'm passionate about cybersecurity, and I just have to. You said IBR, and I was thinking IPA. I thought it was like a different type of beer or something. So thank you.
Well,
for
here in Pacific Northwest, IPAs would probably be more appropriate. Maybe we're drinking IPAs while we're trying to figure out the IBR risks.
That could be.
I don't know. So yeah, I mean it's a big topic, right? And we kind of want to know everybody. I mean, I don't think it came out of left field, but I think industry sometimes, at least some people that aren't familiar with IBRs, are going, where did this come from? Why are IBRs getting regulatory attention now? Why does NERC and FERC really care?
Well, you know, it didn't come out of left field, but like most things, it's growing behind the scenes and you're not really paying attention to it. And then that time comes where it becomes a thing and you're like, whoa, where'd that come from? But the signs were always there all along. I think the driving factor of this is not so much cyber as it is operations. And there have been operational events where the inverter-based resources, the inverters specifically, did not ride through grid disturbances, voltage variances, and the inverters just tripped off for whatever reason. And that's not an issue when there's a small number of IBRs on the grid, but as that number increases and they become a larger percentage of the overall capacity, it's actually impactful. And so now it's at a point where if they're not in scope for some of the operational requirements, if they're not being managed and configured properly and have the right capabilities, there's a very real risk that they can impact the larger grid. And so that's what's driving the registration. And we'll talk about the cyber aspect of that, I suppose, at some point, but it's just they're becoming significant enough to be impactful. There have been events that have had impacts, and so they need to be governed.
Absolutely. And I know WEC was asked by FERC to do a study on this. And that was that report came out not too long ago. And we'll put it down in the comments section. But that's where we learned, I think. And I think those that were doing that report or building that were kind of surprised by these real events that had happened, these disturbances that weren't riding through, as you mentioned, or, you know, that, you know, solar tripping. It was an interesting report overall that I thought maybe was a little surprising. And in that same report, I think they discussed scale and growth projections. It wasn't, that was something that was relevant to why they need to pay attention to IBRs more. And, just having some more visibility on those risks and challenges.
Yeah, exactly. I know I was looking at some of the stats on there, and I think I wrote some numbers down, but in surveying the industry, trying to get a sense of what's out there. It looks like there's almost 900 inverter-based resources, something on the order of 39 megawatts. If I have that, that's probably gigawatts. I think I might have written that down wrong. something of that nature. Might have been 39,000 megawatts, I think. So it's, you know, it's enough to be impactful. And bear in mind that when we talk IBRs, this new initiative are for those that are connected below the BES threshold. So there could be, obviously, there's been wind connected to the grid that is part of the BES. It's been out there for quite some time, and there could be large scale solar projects as well, or battery, that are already part of the BES. This is in addition to the BES. So this is on top of what's already in scope, things that are becoming newly in scope, including many new organizations that have not previously had to register with NERC and been subject to the
requirements. And I think that's the big noise right now, is the registration process. You know, it reminds me back in the day when we were first going from the urgent action standards for SIP and moving into bringing in utilities. And I guess the O&P standards were happening at the same time, but this big registration to meet that BES definition, or bulk power system definition, in order to get that registration. And here we are again, another set of, I don't know how it's actually going. I haven't talked to anyone that's involved in registration, but I can imagine it's a little bit of hunting. You get a lot of people coming to you, and then there's also some outreach, trying to assure that everyone understands what their obligations are. And that just brings me all the way back to, you know, 2005, 2006 timeframe.
Yeah, what's old is new again, and there's quite a bit of outreach going on. It's actually a multi-year effort. Their target date is March of next year to have everybody registered that should be registered. And obviously, there is a little bit of hunting. There's, you would hope that those in the business would be paying attention and would be aware of the requirements. But even at that, there's going to be some that just miss it. NERC and the regions are definitely going out there, identifying candidate organizations. They're doing outreach. They're reaching out to folks and trying to get everybody registered. And you know, if they miss somebody, well, yeah, that'll be what it'll be. And
well, you know, you even know, I think it was last year, there was I've heard of general generation units out there that were probably supposed to be registered at the very beginning of this are just being identified. And that's just by nature of how this works. So it'll be an ongoing process, and obviously bringing IBRs into the flow is into the fray is just adding to that overall complexity of managing compliance. And that's kind of a lead in to this. If you're registering, there's an assumption that there is some kind of regulatory requirement that's coming. And recently I heard, I think O&P, since reliability is the first thing, O&P standards are probably going to be the first ones to come into this. But I heard recently from someone that there was a question about whether the current O&P standards would be automatically effective to these IBRs, or are they going to have to redo all of the standards to bring in those IBRs into scope? Or how does that go about? I don't really understand the process there. Is there a SAR that's required? I haven't heard much about that. I don't know if you have.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've looked at it more from the SIP side, because thinking of, you know, SIP 2 when you decide what's in scope, and it's based largely on the bulk electric system definition. And in this process, there have not been any changes to the BES definition. So this new registration are for things that are, I guess, technically not part of the bulk electric system as defined. But the registration criteria in the rules of procedure has been modified. So devices as low as 20 MVA aggregate at a common connection point, 60 kV or above. So lowering the thresholds from 75 to 20 and from 100 kV down to 60 to pull in these types of resources are being looked at. On the O&P standards, it would be as simple as, I think, just changing the applicability in the standards. I know they're looking at specific requirements that they would want to apply. And of course, the registration, they have the new registration categories. So these are not GOGOP, they're GOGOP Type 2 or Category 2, as they're calling them. So it's actually another category of registration that would come into play. So I don't believe those have been finalized. I think they have an idea, obviously, of what they want to include, and that'll be just the beginning. SIP's coming, right? You know, forecast hasn't ordered yet, but
it's but you know,
it's
how
the obvious
works.
Next step.
Yeah, it takes time, right? This could be 5 years down the line before we see any regulation actually applied to IBR owners. So it'll be an interesting process to see how this goes. I just haven't seen a lot of conversation about what standards, what requirements are going to be specifically applicable to IBRs. It's more about all the registration right now, which makes sense. That's where we're going. But I assume asset owners are kind of asking that question themselves, what's to come? So I think that's a good segue into, let's assume that NERC-SIP is coming into play. You know, let's look at that from a cybersecurity risk perspective. You know, what are those vulnerabilities that are in IBRs that are really, really concerning to us? And, you know, what are those risks that are a little different than traditional generation assets?
Yeah, well, it's a different world. So, you know, the cyber risks at a very high macro level are the same as they were everywhere, right? There's potential attackers who want to hurt you, and they're going to find ways to come in and get in. But IBRs in many ways are different. For one thing, it's just different types of equipment. And so the traditional equipment that we would put into a substation or a power plant, you know, your protective relays and PLCs and that sort of thing, they can exist in the IBR world as well. But the I in IBR stands for inverter. And so this is a new category of device that hasn't typically been in scope for NERC-SIP. The vendors that are creating them may or may not also sell equipment that is in the SIP world, so they may or may not be familiar with NERC-SIP type requirements or the security expectations of the industry. Obviously, these are distributed. They're in areas that your physical security aspect, your communication approaches are likely going to be different versus what you might see with a lot of your large power plants have been part of vertically integrated utilities, or they came out of that world. So they're familiar with interconnections and communication interconnections and all of that. The software and the control systems can be different. And again, you have a lot of new players in the industry, new vendors coming up to build solutions in these areas, to manage solutions in these areas. We've seen that in the renewable space, new companies building out generation assets, and they're new to the industry. And in some cases, they've had to register because they did become bulk electric system. So it's an expansion of the ecosystem. It's an expansion of the geographic footprint, the technology footprint. So just a lot of things to cover from a cyber perspective.
Yeah, you said something that I think really, if you're a vendor listening to this, pay attention. Start planning your roadmap to ensure that you have embedded security by design into those tools that you're selling to these IBR owners. It's going to be really important. It's going to make your life easier as well. But yeah, you touch on some things. There's definitely similar things, but on a different perspective, right? Just IBRs in just by nature are more decentralized. So you're likely going to find more remote management. With that, since a lot of this is remote, you're going to find vendor firmware that's not as up to date or applied as you might expect it to be. Maybe the vendors does have some really good firmware updates that are addressing security issues, but I suspect in this world that maybe those updates aren't as frequent. And then, you know, there's probably limited segmentation. From my knowledge, that's a truism that some of the network segmentations around these IBRs are going to have to be considered. So there's a lot to talk about, and that those are all risks associated with why we're paying attention to this. And, you know, it's based on assuring and helping build stronger reliability through cybersecurity and through better operations overall. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Just that cybersecurity perspective, I know that good cybersecurity programs help build good business practices around reliability and resilience. So, if you're new to, you're an IBR owner and you're going, why do I have to do all this stuff? That's why. You'll become more reliant and resilient over time.
It can be a challenge. Another aspect of these, as you mentioned, there's many of them. They're more dispersed. But the reason they've been out of scope is because of the lower capacity, right? The lower output and all that. And that's actually a bit of a challenge, because if you look at the cost of security and trying to scale up solutions, we've had the same issue with smaller utilities, harder financially for them to scale up the solutions they need. And certainly at a smaller facility, we'll have the same issues, where if you have a large power plant, just financially, because of the amount of revenue you're generating, you can afford some of that security. But at the smaller units that are, a 25 MVA solar facility, the revenue that it's generating is a tenth of what a 250 MVA generating plant might be generating. And so there just isn't the financial capability to put in the large scaled up solutions that you might see at a more of a big iron type location. So scaling down some of those solutions, trying to get the same effectiveness of security without the same approach that we've taken in the past, can be a challenge.
And that's maybe similar to some very small co-ops and municipals that are working, towards more creative solutions, because they don't have the budgets either often. Mm-hmm. Those that are below the current NERC BEZ definition, they want to do good cybersecurity work. We got NRECA and we've got the APPA out there promoting good cyber, and a lot of programs that are helping encourage these small utilities. So if you are an IBR owner, I really suggest you pay attention to those type of smaller programs that are geared towards your size of organization, where there's a lot of practicality that can be applied, and work with your peers too to try to understand what they're doing in order to address things. And I don't know if NERC SIP is equipped to address IBRs completely, but I assume that they're going to be low impact if we stay with the same kind of regime we've been doing with NERC SIP standards. So that's kind of a very bare bones, low end type of set of cybersecurity requirements. I can't imagine anything that's in there that would be difficult for an IBR owner to really adopt. I know that implementation is always going to be difficult, but I think it would be applicable. But I assume that we'd really need to assess the IBR world and look at those low impact facilities that they own and just really understand whether the current SIP 3R2 low impact cybersecurity plan sections, all of those are applicable or workable, or is there something else that we need to consider?
Yeah, it's interesting. A couple things. First of all, the concept of low impact. Low impact has always been, honestly, pretty minimal requirements. I think a lot of people in the security business would say too minimal. We've seen them being ratcheted up a little bit over the last few years, and I think that trend's going to continue. One of the reasons for that, it actually goes back to an audit that was done by the federal government against FERC and NERC, Department of Energy and FERC, on how they were doing with protecting the grid. And one of the key findings that really made some changes coming out of that was the GSA, who had done the audit, determined that FERC had missed the risk of a coordinated attack against multiple facilities. And so from a individual perspective, these low impact facilities and really these IBRs individually, they don't really matter a whole lot. Even from an operational perspective, if one inverter fails to ride through or trips off, it's not going to be an impact. But in the aggregate, it is. And we've seen that operationally. And anything that can happen operationally could, at least theoretically, be triggered through a cyber attack. So the question is, what requirements really make sense for trying to minimize the risk of a coordinated attack? You don't need to have perfection. You don't need to have the level of rigor that we have for high and medium impact facilities, where we do not want a control center to be compromised under any circumstances. Whereas if you have a large number of lower impact facilities, it may be okay if a few of them get compromised. But you need to have protections that are sufficient so that most of them will not. And so finding, you know, kind of right-sizing the standards, finding the requirements that make sense to minimize the risk, realize you don't need to eliminate all of the risk. You just need to bring it down to a sufficient level. It's kind of like I use the analogy sometimes with vector control, right? You don't need to get rid of every mosquito in the world. You just need to keep the levels down to a sufficient level that the risk is appropriate. And so that's what we're looking at. The other thing I would bring up was cloud. A lot of discussion going on now with cloud, and oftentimes with these distributed resources, they look at cloud solutions, or they look at similar distributed type control where it's not in a, you know, hardened control center and a hardened data center. Things are distributed out in the field more, and they're harder to protect because of their both physically and logically dispersed. And so a lot of the same issues we see with cloud will come up with that. And sometimes they are literally the same because the control systems are in the cloud in many cases for these things.
It sure is. And I think that plays into what asset owners and vendors really should be considering right now. And I think that is risk-based focused. We talk about that a lot, risk-based, what does that mean? You just described it very well. Consider, you know, a practical approach that meets, you know, what the real risk, what the threat is, right? Define the threat, define the impact, and then, you know, look at what controls you need to apply that minimize that effort, that is aligned with who you are and what you're doing. So I always think of it as the good neighbor set of security controls. You recognize the fact that if I'm compromised, it probably is not going to have a big deal. But if there's 100 of us being compromised at the same time, that might have a big impact. Or I may be impacting somebody else. So I want to have at least a good set of generally good cybersecurity controls in place, but it needs to be applicable based on the risk that you are. So you want to really have that risk assessment that's focused on IBRs that has practicality based on the size of your organization and where you're at in your cybersecurity journey. I also think supply chain vetting is going to be huge for IBRs. For inverter manufacturers, that's going to be new for the inverter manufacturers or somewhat new. I guess they probably have heard some of this already. But really for the IBR owners, the stakeholders, they're going to have to think about supply chain a little bit more because often those manufacturers are in their business. Much like how we have, GE used to be big time in selling, these solutions where they were sole sourced and they were the ones that brought in the big iron and they had remote access and remote management everywhere. I think that's probably still true a little bit in these smaller inverter organizations. So they're going to have to think about, the supply chain on that perspective. And then I think collaboratively, the industry needs to have a better mechanism for incident reporting, because you mentioned that earlier, that, they missed something. How do you deal with that with a bunch of smaller organizations, owners of these IBRs, to give them a mechanism to do incident reporting correctly and even discover that incident reporting? Because if you look at the R2s, at 3R2, where's the requirement in there for logging? Where's the requirement in R2? For any type of discovery capabilities? They do have the incident response plan requirement, but that doesn't require you to have the tools in place in order to actually know whether you were compromised or not. So I think that's some of the issues that they should do. So we've gone really long, Steve. This is 25 minutes into it, or 20 minutes into it. So I want to kind of close this out. So what's the one thing you'll be watching closely this year when it comes to IBRs and security?
Oh, that's a good, I don't know if there's a one thing. I guess what I'd be most interested in is, are there any inclination to include these on the SIP side? My primary focus is. So just watching how things play out and really keeping an eye out for clues that the security requirements are going to be coming. And I know that, bring up another topic, kind of, I know we're trying to close it out, but NARUC has been working with DOE to put together baselines, cybersecurity baselines for primarily the distribution side, but also for DERs. And so there's a potential overlap there. So aside from NERC SIP, there could be other things coming from a security perspective on IBRs. And so maybe while you're waiting for the, you're watching the boxer's right hand and he gets you with the left hook or something, just be aware some things could come from a direction you did not expect.
Yes, be very, very mindful of the NARUC baselines that are out there. If you don't, we'll try to put a link down below as well for those. Those are really important to look at and recognize that NARUC is kind of the association that not necessarily governs, but helps build policies around the governance of state commissioners, the PUCs, that is going to become a state issue. Those baselines have been written, they exist, but the adoption of how they're managed are going to be at a state level, and that's still being discussed. So keep your eye on that. If you're an IBR guy and you're really interested in this, well, you should be interested if you have IBRs. Pay attention to NARUC, pay attention to NERC, pay attention to what's going on. If you need to talk about it, call us. We're Archer. We live and breathe compliance. And we love the electric sector, and we can help you. We can help you with registration. We can help you with almost everything related to getting ready for what's to come. And I got to tell you, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's a big lift. There's a lot to it. And you got to dot your I's and cross your T's and be ready for it. So this is Archer. We're going to sign off with Direct Connect. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate your time, Steve.
You bet. Thank you, Stacey.
Not only is Direct Connect available to listen to, you can also watch each episode on our YouTube channel. Just go to youtube.com/@ArcherU. If you're interested in who we are and what we do, you can head on over to our website at archerint.com. You can also follow us on our social media platforms, Archer International on Facebook and Archer Energy Solutions LLC on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening, and check back every other week for brand new episodes of Direct Connect.